I'm Christine, I'm an addict. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to share. Sharing at a dinosaur day is a big damn deal. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I hear dinosaur, I think, man, these people are going to have great recovery, and sometimes they don't. So I apologize from the start. Anyway, I got nervous when I started walking up here, so I apologize. I'm grateful to be a recovering addict in Narcotics Anonymous. And I got here when I was 23, so I don't have a lot of drug-a-log for you guys. And I have been here longer than I used, so my story is recovery. It's life. It's good decisions. It's bad decisions. It's step work. It's service work. It's all those things that we do to stay clean. The disease is such a small part of my life. And, you know, my upbringing was no different than yours. It could have been worse. It could have been better. You know, my dad beat my mom. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was a codependent. I was my dad's drinking buddy at 3 years old. You know, all those things, all those rationales why we chose to pick up on our own. I chose to pick up on my own when I was 14, because that's what the cool kids were doing. So, I don't know. I don't think I ever fit in with anybody. I've always been this is my bubble kind of person. So my bottom is different than a lot of people's bottom. My bottom is the same as a lot of people's bottom. So, but like I said, my active addiction is such a small part. I'll tell you that I didn't become desperate and in the bottom of my own barrel until after my son was born. And I was 18 when I had him. And a lot of you know my story. My secondary disease is anger and rage, and I like to hit things and people. And I haven't done that since I had 8 years clean, so I have a lot of clean time there too. And not that I don't rage, because I still do, because it's a very comfortable feeling for me, but that's definitely part of my story. After I had my son, I didn't want to be a mom. I didn't want that responsibility. My uncle and his girlfriend, they lived on the same property as we did, and so I had them move in with me so that they could watch my newborn. And I bought their heroin for them so that I could go away and play, and they would take care of my child, because that's what a dumb 18-year-old mom I was. Because I knew that they weren't going anywhere because the heroin was in the house. And I was a selfish addict. You know, I wanted a party. I didn't want that child. And when he was a year old, I gave him to his dad, because it was safer for him than the life I was living. And, you know, I grew up hating my mom because she let my dad beat her. I had no respect for her. And at 19, I married a man that decided that I was going to be his punching bag. So I became my mom. I became very codependent. And I hid. And and that's really probably the main reason why I sent my son to live with his dad, was because I needed him to be safe, because he wasn't safe with me. And that child at 2 years old knew that I was untrustworthy. He knew that he did not want to go places with me. He kicked and he screamed, and I had to bribe him with ice cream and just to get him to go with me for a few hours or a weekend or whatever it was. And I think that he He was graduating from preschool, and I was trying so hard to get there, and I couldn't. I was late, I missed it, and I took him with me afterwards, and we're driving down the freeway, and he looks at me in his little four-year-old eyes, and he says, "Mom, drugs destroy dreams, and you're destroying mine." Still, 24 years later, that sentence fucks me up. You know, and I'm not going to say that, like, I instantly had that epiphany that I needed to be clean. I was mad at the daycare, and I was mad at his dad, and I was mad at everybody for teaching him about drugs. And, but that child had never seen me high since. And he's 29 now. So, June 30th, 1994, I decided to start a new way of life. And I packed my bags. I packed my bag, my paper bag. And let's not bullshit around here. You know, I had one change of clothes and a toothbrush and a paper bag. And that heroin addict that used to watch my baby, I knew that she was in Narcotics Anonymous because I used to come over here to Tulare to the methadone clinic and borrow money from her from an NA meeting. So I knew where to find her. And she told me that I could move in with her, but I had to do 90 and 90, and I had to get a sponsor, and I had to stay clean. I had to do all those things that we say to you when you first get here. And I was desperate. So I did those things. And she was dating somebody then, and she was, she had 2 years clean, I think, and she was dating my friend Jeff W., and, he and I became best friends. We were both newcomers. We started hanging out together. He made sure I got to meetings. And they split up, and he started dating this redheaded chick. And he used to tell me, "You need to meet Sherry. She's great. She's got great recovery. You know, she needs to be your sponsor." And I'm like, "I don't want to know her. She's loud, and she's mean, and she's a bitch." You guys laugh, but if you knew her 24 years ago, you'd have been saying the same shit. But, you know, finally he got me to meet her, and she did become my sponsor, and they moved in together, and then they moved me in with them so I would have a safe place, and then they made me get a job, and they made me get a license, and they made me do all those things the responsible, productive members of society do. They taught me how to be a grown-up. They taught me how to pick my son up on time when I said I was going to pick him up. They taught me how to buy him Christmas gifts instead of me a new pair of shoes. So the Women in Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to be a parent. They taught me how to be reliable when I said I was going to do something for that five-year-old. So he slowly started trusting me. And he slowly started to believe that I was going to be a decent mom. I'm not going to say he believed I was going to be a good mom, because I don't think he thought that until he had his own kids. But I'm always going to be grateful for those beginning lessons in Narcotics Anonymous, because I didn't know how to be that. I didn't know how to get up and show up to work on time, and I didn't know how to be. I'm not even going to lie to you guys. When I used to tell people that I'm going to come over, they expected me 3 weeks later in recovery, because I always told people, "I'm going to come by later," and I'd show up 2 or 3 days later. It was later. I had no respect for time and commitment. So they made me get into service. I was a secretary of the Monday night meeting when we were still at the high school, you know. Then I became a GSR, and I'll tell you what, you guys hear a lot of stuff talked about Narcotics Anonymous service work and area service and how horrible it is, and I'm not going to lie, sometimes it's bad, and back then it was bad, you know. There was the slamming on the tables and the coffee flying, and oh wait, that was me doing that. No, it was bad. You know, people came in, dope fiends came in, and they would change group consciences to do what they wanted to get done and then change it back after they had that thing changed. So I got into the traditions and I got into the guidelines and I got into the concepts because I didn't like being manipulated like that. So I stayed in service to Narcotics Anonymous for a very, very long time. Like I said, I started at secretary level, treasurer area. I've held every area position that there is, except for HMI, for no other reason than I just haven't. And I went to region, and I became the RDA, and I went all over the United States because you guys trusted me to do that for you. You trusted me to go and carry the message back and carry your vote there. And that's a big deal to be trusted like that by a bunch of addicts, because you guys know how we are. You know, and service work taught me how to be responsible with Narcotics Anonymous funds and how to be the person that I said I was going to be when I said I was going to be that person. Suit up and show up. You know, around here we say a lot of times, fake it till you make it, and service work will teach you that. You go in there with all good intentions, and it brings out every character defect you'll ever know or didn't know you had. And you'll get to see everybody else's, too. But I would like to think that service work has changed a lot in the last 24 years. It's not as volatile as it was, because this is the new generation of softer, kinder, gentler. When I got here, they used to tell us to sit down and shut the fuck up. Now we're like, oh, please don't leave. Don't go out there and kill yourself. You know, and sometimes you guys just need to hear, sit down and shut the fuck up. And sometimes you just need to hear, don't leave, don't go kill yourself. You know, I've made some really great decisions in Narcotics Anonymous. I got my kid back. He came to live with me because he wanted to, because he thought that I was the better parent at some point. And I'll always be grateful that I learned that here. And I used to share that if you've lost your kids, if you continue to take the next indicated right step, that you can get them back. And I said that at one time when I was sharing at a women's retreat, and I had a lady stand up and yell at me, "You lying fucking bitch." And I was like, whoa, okay. Must not have happened for you. So I would like to think that everybody has the opportunity to get your children back, even if it's when they become adults. You know, because that has happened here too. But I do believe the next right indicated thing is how we move forward. You know, I said that my secondary disease is rage. I like to be angry. I'm comfortable there. And I was talking to one of my friends in the kitchen, and she was like, that's just a wall you put up to keep everybody at arm's length. And it is. You know, I don't like to get close to a lot of people. And that's because I have always believed in keeping my circle small. I love everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. I just don't like you all. I'm not going to lie. Everybody knows I'm an asshole. You know, and we don't have to like everybody here. We have different personalities. We all aren't going to click. And if you think that just because we're clean, we're all going to become super spiritual, clicky people, you're wrong. Look around the rooms. There are different cliques all around us. But I would like to think that I am accepting of every addict that comes through the door. I just don't have to let you inside my bubble. Today I get to set boundaries for myself. And if you're not healthy for me, or if you're in toxic chaos, I choose not to have you in my life. And I get to do that for me today, because I can get into the chaos and I can be so comfortable there that I jump right in both feet and I become angry, volatile, Christy, and I'm jumping out of my car and trying to pull people out of their car. And if you guys don't know that amount of rage, then you wouldn't understand why I say, I'm sorry, I can't have you in my circle. Because I do know that rage, because I scared my best friend Tiffany, because I did that one year at Christmas. You know, so I have tried really hard not to be that person that scares her passengers when she's driving down the road. You know, Ten years ago, I lost my sister to this disease, and I don't talk about her a lot. And not because I didn't love her, because I did. She was my best friend. And this disease took her. And this disease took her hating me. Because I took her kids from her right before she died. And I live with a lot of guilt on that, because what if she would have lived because I didn't do that? I didn't call CPS on her. And I had to work a lot of issues around that, that my nephews needed me more than she did. You know, because we learn here to do the next right thing. And those boys needed to survive my sister's disease. And they have. You know, they're both doing well. They're both having children. You know, and then my little sister, she's in the disease right now, and she just lost her child, her youngest child. And my husband and I were going to take custody of her, but she's living with my 21-year-old nephew, who is a better parent than any of me and my sisters ever could have hoped to be. You know, at 18 years old, he took custody of his 10-year-old sister, and he's raising her. Because he decided he needed to break the cycle. And I would like to think that my nieces and nephews have seen a change because I changed. You know, I don't go to family functions because they get loaded. I don't go to the club and go dancing because all my friends are going. I don't go where the disease is active because I don't need my disease to be active. I've had several sponsors in this program, and they're either deceased, loaded, or just moved away. I just recently went through a new sponsor change, and I'm a horrible sponsee. I don't call. I try. And I just told her, I suck at this whole phone call thing, you know. But I can tell you that I've worked the steps. I've worked the steps on the disease of addiction. I've worked the steps on anger and rage. I've worked the steps on illness and recovery. I've worked the steps on medication and recovery. You know, I have a friend that she's always, I tell her she's always in a set of steps. I don't know if she really is, but she always sounds like she is. And I worked steps on my glaring defects. Because when they take over my life, I have to do something to change. You know, and 11 years ago, I was in a horrible motorcycle accident. And I almost lost my leg, and I'm legally handicapped, and. You know, 6 surgeries and some skin grafts, and. You know, and it was a life-changing situation for me. I changed my entire life. I went back to school, and I became a nurse, and I wanted to give back to the community because I was able to. You know, I didn't like how neglectful the nurses were when I was in the hospital. And my friends were coming up and helping my husband wash my hair with a 5-gallon bucket and a watering pitcher because nobody would get me up and take me to the shower. And I was bedridden for 6 months. 6 months of physical therapy, and a lot of pain medication. And when I had to detox off of that pain medication, I'll tell you what. I mean, I say this all the time, but if you guys were an opioid user, I don't understand the whole let's do it again, because that's crazy. That was the worst detox I've ever gone through in my life. And you know, my old sponsor, He told me that I needed to come in and I needed to share about that we can take medication here if we do it responsibly. One doctor, one pharmacy, and your core group and your sponsor know exactly what you're taking. Because I don't have MD behind my name and I don't get to decide what my doctor thinks is best for me is not. And, you know, our literature talks about it. So if you have an issue, I'm not saying take medication. I'm saying read the literature, talk to your doctor, talk to your sponsor, and find a game plan. Because we didn't get here to be miserable. We got here to get better. And so my leg is still broken in three places. I'm still held together with titanium. I could run faster to a code than non-crippled people. Because I believe that it's important to get there. And some of you guys know that I just recently quit my job. And I loved being a nurse. I'm still a nurse. I'm just not a practicing nurse right now. Because my employer wanted me to do stuff that questioned my morals and my ethics. And I can't do that. Some of you guys have heard me share that I follow rules like to the T. Because if I break one rule, I will break the next rule and the next rule and the next rule, because if I can get away with it, I will get away with it. And so I don't. I don't break the rules. I don't lie on my charting. I don't. So that whole making me question my ethics and my morality brought out a different behavior in me, and I stood up and I got very confrontational with said employer, and I called my husband and I said, I think it's time for me to quit my job. And because I was ready to cross another boundary, my anger boundary. And it's just safer for me to just leave, you know. And I told my husband afterwards, I was like, after I gave my notice and my last day, and I never planned on walking back into that building. I was just going to, like, blow through my vacation and my sick time and just not go back. And they called me and they told me that they didn't need me to fulfill my last 2 weeks because I was on light duty and they needed somebody that could do my job. It was just fine. I didn't want to go back. But for 5 years, my identity evolved around that job and that person and that character, and I forgot who I was in these rooms. And I was telling Tiffany today that I feel like I don't have anything to offer up here today because I haven't been active, because I'm working 50 hours a week and I'm going to school and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and I'm not, and I'm just not. But what I have done is I have stayed clean. I have attempted to reach out to my sponsor. And I am in contact with my core group on a daily basis. If you don't have a core group, find one, make one, create it. And if those people in your core group don't want to see fantastic, great things for you, they are the wrong friends. If they want to keep you in the chaos and the insanity of the disease and the pain, they are the wrong friends. You know, when I first got here, they used to tell me, what's your motive? What's your motive? What's your motive in that? And today I love that sentence. I hated it then, but I love it now. What is their motive? What is the motive for keeping you sick and twisted? Or wanting you to stay there? For me, I want to see every one of you find peace and serenity. I may not always have it, but I want it. I aspire for it. You know, next week my husband and I are flying out to go see our daughter because she called us while we were on vacation a couple weeks ago and she was emotionally distressed. And she's sad and she's homesick and she misses us. So I came home and I used every one of our miles, and I got us a hotel, and I got us a rental car, and I got us flights, and we're on a plane on Tuesday to go see our kid. Those are the gifts of recovery, that we get to do that today. When our kids need us, we get to suit up and show up, and we get to go. And that kid that hated me, he's 29, and he works for my husband, and I get to see him every day, and he tells me how much he loves me every day. And I get to watch his children. So at some point, I have proven myself because he lets me watch his children. He lets them stay overnight. He knows that I'm going to be with them. I'm not going to leave them with heroin addicts. And, if that was just the only blessing that I got here, was that kid trusting me enough to watch his own children, that would be enough. But that is not the only blessing that I've had here. I have great friends that they call me family. Their family calls me the stray dog, but that's because they're jealous. I've had the same friends for 24 years. New ones have come and stayed. But my core group wanted to see me do better things. They wanted better things for me. Our kids grew up together. Our kids' kids know each other. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I love the life that I've been given here, and I'm married to my best friend. Some of you guys know that when we got together was not the most serene and peaceful beginning of a relationship, but we have survived it. We're getting ready to celebrate. Tiffany, 14 years. I know it's a long time. It's the longest relationship I've ever had. It's the longest relationship that I've ever had with somebody that I love with my entire heart. It's the only relationship that I've ever had that I've been completely faithful, not looking for something else. Because he is enough. Good, bad, and indifferent, he is enough. He's had his own illnesses here lately, 2 neck surgeries and a knee surgery, and now he's suffering from severe fatigue. I told him, thank God they don't have a surgery for that. And, but he works really hard for us. And I'm blessed because he was right in the middle of selling the business when I chose to quit my job, and he pulled out of the deal so that I could quit. For my mental health and my emotional health, he sacrificed one more time. You can get that here too. Somebody to love you enough. Heidi talked about retail therapy. I like to shop. And since I don't have a job, I don't get to shop like I used to. No, really, I'd like to shop more than he lets me, but, if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, give yourself a break. Do the 90 and 90. Get a sponsor, work some steps. And if it's not clicking with that sponsor, get a new one. It's not written anywhere that you're stuck with the one you picked. And I tell people all the time, I'm going to finish with this. I tell you that if you go into a meeting and you hear good long shit and that's the person you think you want to be your sponsor, go to dinner with them. Go to ice cream with them. Go to coffee with them. See how they treat the person bringing them food. Go to their home and see how they treat their children and their spouses. Because we can come in here and say anything we want. Unless you've seen us in our own environment, in our own life circumstances, you don't know who we really are. Because we're dope fiends and we can come in here and talk good long shit. I'll tell you the truth, I'm an asshole, I call it like I see it, sometimes people don't like what I have to say, it hurts their feelings. If you don't want my opinion, please don't ask me. I don't volunteer it, but if you ask, you will get it. Because what I've learned here is secrets keep us sick. Lies keep us sicker. And I'm not going to live in your misery with you. You know, love yourself enough to want one more day. And if you can't love yourself enough to want one more day, let us do it for you. Because somebody here will do that for you. You know, go to meetings. Don't go to the same meetings. You'll hear the same shit. Go to different towns. Go to conventions. Get fed spiritually. Use that phone list they give you your first couple of days you go to meetings. They come in handy. Maybe the first 5, 6 people won't answer the phone, but the 7th or 8th might. So keep trying. You know, and just remember, we're all human. It doesn't matter if you have 30 days, 1 day, or what was that, 35 years? Jesus. You know, when I got here, 8 years was a lot. 8 years was an old timer, and I'm like, 35 years? You know, you guys are really fortunate new coming in, and you have so much clean time sitting in meetings with you today. Because at 8 years, I was still really sick. So can you imagine what those 8 years? I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. You know, so take advantage of your old timers. You know, because they've been around. They've seen this program evolve into this newer, softer, kinder, gentler way. And welcome to a new way of life. Thank you for letting me share.